This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Christian Minetto, welcome to Escape Hour on Joy 94.9.
Buongiorno.
Buongiorno. Oh. Come va?
Bene, grazie. Wonderful to be here.
It's lovely to have you here. And I think you're Melbourne-based.
I am Melbourne, born and bred and based.
And globetrotting travel writer.
Yes, spent a lot of the year abroad, clocking up frequent flyer points and eating my way through different cultures.
Good.
Lovely. Yeah. It sounds the right fit for this
yeah,
program.
Absolutely.
I think so.
So you're a travel writer.
Yes.
And you've recently written a very impressive tome about Rome.
Thank you. I have, and it's for a publisher called Hardy Grant, which is actually based in Melbourne.
Oh, okay.
And it's part of a series.
It's good to know that a publisher still exists.
Yes, they do exist.
Paper.
Yes. No. Print is not dead and is not dying. It's downsized, but it's certainly not dead. So this is a book. This is pretty much a labour of love, because most of the work that I do is actually for Lonely Planet, and I've been working for them for 13 years now.
Mm. And two of the cities you write about the most are?
Two of the cities, there's LA and New York.
Which was our theme song.
Yes. Nice segue.
You and Patsy Gallant.
Nice segue. And Italy is another country that I cover. And this is my first book for Hardy Grant, and it's my first book completely from scratch, because with Lonely Planet I write a lot of new stuff, but most of the books that I've worked on, there's been previous editions, so there's always been a little bit of stuff
groundwork that, already done.
Yeah, as this is completely written from scratch and photographed from scratch.
So when you're doing that Lonely Planet writing, are you sort of contained to a format that's already existing and a target market, and this is something that you could just get that whiteboard out and start from scratch?
Yeah, with LP, everything's very heavily templated, there's a lot of space to move creatively. I mean, I'm commissioned to update content for a particular destination, and then I have to meet all the intros and the different level. Every city, every region has a different level, and that comprises of different amounts of work, so I have to meet all those requirements or prerequisites. But then it's up to me to cover what I think should be covered. Mm. So there's a lot of room to move there.
Because cities evolve.
Completely. Constantly evolving. And one of the great things about doing destinations more than once is learning constantly about that city. I mean, Naples is the first city that I covered for Lonely Planet, and that 13 years ago. And I've learnt so much about that place, and I'm still learning. Every time I go there, there's always new stuff to explore, and it makes my job very interesting.
So let's turn our minds to Rome Precincts, this book that you have written. It's not particularly through an LGBTI lens, is it? It's more about Rome in general.
It's Rome in general. So it's not LGBT particular. But I suppose that everything that's in here is very LGBT friendly. And
through your eyes.
Yeah, exactly. And I think generally Italy as a destination is quite LGBT friendly. I mean, there are parts of the country that are more friendly than others, I suppose, are more progressive in their views. But overall, I think the Italian mindset is when push comes to shove, is actually quite flexible and open and evolved. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Rome's a big city.
Yeah.
It's a very important global city.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what made you fall in love with Rome?
The layers, just the beauty. I mean, I'm a Melbourne boy and I love Melbourne, but, you know, we all know with newer cities that we have some beautiful architecture, but you have to kind of blur out the bits in between sometimes, you know.
Exactly.
And it's like, look how beautiful Melbourne is if you look that way and squint your eyes.
Yeah, exactly.
But, like, with Rome, and I'm talking about central Rome, because in all fairness, I mean, the suburbs of a lot of European cities and Italian cities are pretty ugly,
like
that kind of post-war boom.
Brutalist,
horrible,
concrete,
not very livable.
Yeah.
Ugly. But the centres, like the centre of Rome looks like a theatre set. It's absolutely incredible. And it does something to you. I think when you're surrounded by beautiful things, it elevates you both, I think, spiritually and also mentally. Well, I think your mood. It's true. It really does. And I find that it also then reflects on the people. The people live and express themselves in very dramatic and poetic ways, and in a way that perhaps we do less here. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Right. And when you're there, are you really imbued with the whole culture and infuse completely. Yourself? Because you speak Italian,
yes.
Right? So you just become a Roman. Is that how you completely. Absorb the city?
Completely. I do. It's funny when you're the son of migrants how your sense of self or identity is in constant flux. Mm. So, and then sometimes when I'm there, I feel very Australian because my Italian friends will say certain things and I'll just, my Aussie side comes out and thinks, well, actually, I don't see it that way. Or
right.
As Australians, I suppose we're more casual and less formal, and sometimes that comes out. But overall, when you speak a language, it's more than just words, isn't it? It's like a mindset.
Correct.
So when I'm speaking Italian and I'm with my Italian friends and I'm in Italy, I do feel my Italian side more strongly, I suppose.
You do phrase the whole world. Stefan, you're a French native speaker. I'm a German speaker. You're an Italian speaker. Do you find that same thing when you speak French, or do you think you perceive the world slightly through a different lens?
I think you do frame it differently, and I think the language is structured differently, and I think that structures the way your brain works as well.
Because, the way words are weighted.
So I think that's absolutely true, that you it's framed differently, and it's difficult. I mean, it was difficult. I mean, I've been in English-speaking countries now for 20 years, so it's a bit better for me. But it's a kind of thing that you have to get used to it. And culturally, there's still something that shocked me when I in Australia that I was like, oh, I wouldn't do that.
Mm. Well, this is now you would.
Well, probably. Possibly. Possibly. Depends on what it is.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're with the Escape Hour, Stefan and Mark. We have a special guest today.
We do. We have Christian Bonetto, who's talking to us, Melbourne-based globetrotting travel writer, and we're talking about Rome through viewed.
Is it the French pronunciation?
Rome. Is it, we were talking about just before the break about how language frame your mind, and yes, that was the French pronunciation of Rome. That will be yes. And
sounds good.
In Italian? Italian?
Roma.
Yeah. So,
see, I mean, there is a distinctive national character, I think, that I know when I speak German all day or Dutch all day, there is a way that I perceive the world and see the world very Germanly.
Completely.
So what is your mind shift when you're in Italy? Are you all of a sudden the arms start flailing and you know, pinching women on the bum.
No, I can't do that, strangely enough. How is it different? I feel
me too moments,
I'm more, anyway. I'm perhaps more sensitive or emotional. Not emotional as in like crying down the street. But I don't know, there's a word in Italian called tenerezza, which means tenderness.
We don't have that in German.
Translated loose, yeah. No comment. But I suppose there's that, like with my friends, it's just in the words are so much sweeter and the way you interact with people is different. It's a little bit more sentimental than I am in my Anglo world.
Because English isn't necessarily a very emotional language, but it is a very endearing language. It's a bit like Dutch.
Yeah, definitely.
But the English mindset's is not necessarily overly connected.
It's more measured.
It's more measured. That's a beautiful word.
Oh, that's
so... How do you say that in Italian? Because that's certainly not... Exactly. So you set foot in Rome, and every time it just must be a kaleidoscope of emotions and experiences and thoughts. And so what is the first thing you do when you get there? Is it eating?
Yeah. Well, it depends what time I land. If I land in the evening, I just basically have a shower and I go for a walk, because I like to, at night, just walk around. And even places like the Trevi Fountain are, you know, they're so busy during the day. But if you go after, I don't know, like 10 o'clock at night, I mean, there's always going to be a few people there, but it's magical because there's like fewer people there. And that's one of the tips that I'd have is do a lot of the sightseeing of, obviously not museums because you have to go during opening hours, but that kind of landmark stuff, go late at night because you just have it to yourself and it's so magical. So
and
beautiful.
It's well lit.
Yeah. Yes, it is well lit.
Is it safe? Do you feel safe?
Yes, very safe.
Well, then do it. Sounds
absolutely
like a great
safe.
Opportunity. Have dinner and a glass of wine and then, you know, in that loving haze, go and drink in Rome.
And also, you know, restaurants close later there, so you can go and have dinner you know, even on a Tuesday night at 10 or 10:30 or 11, it's not a problem. So that's what I do. And then if I get there in the morning, I go to a pasticceria, this pastry shop, which is actually not far from the station, called Regoli, and they do martozzi, which are these yeast buns, and they're filled with this beautiful freshly whipped cream. It sounds deadly, it probably is, but they're so delicious. And the people who work there are so lovely, and I have my espresso, although I have to say that I think that the espresso in Naples is better than the one in Rome.
Should we be clutching our pearls? Is this
no. And dare I say, moment? Can I even go one further than that and actually say that the coffee in Melbourne is better than the coffee in Italy?
No, you can't say
it's
that.
True. It's true, because you know what? Italy is only
we
now.
We got it from the Italians.
We did, but then we improved it, like many things. And
how
I think...
How do you think that coffee was improved? Because it is such an... Italy has gifted Australia so much with its migrant community, and what's most really now Australian culture is so much what has been taken from Italian culture. How can you say this heresy?
Because
and only you as an Italian could get away with saying
this. Of course,
this.
But it's true. Because the Italians over roast their beans, so you get a very strong but quite a bitter espresso compared to specialty coffee, which we do, where we lightly roast beans here. So the flavour is a lot more nuanced. And funnily enough, Italy is only now beginning to kind of like be aware of or like go towards specialty coffee. And specialty coffee shops are starting to open up. And there's a place in the book called Faro, that's owned by this young gun, this very attractive-looking young gun. And I said to him, gosh, this place reminds me of Melbourne. He goes, well, that's where I got the idea, because he worked at Las Chicas in Balaclava.
No way.
And that's where he first learned about specialty. And then he went and he worked in London, and he worked at one of the big micro-roasteries in Berlin and honed his skills, and then was brave enough to go back to Rome and to open his own... actually Rome's first specialty coffee shop.
So what do you mean by specialty coffee?
So seasonal beans. Okay. Seasonal beans, not like micro-roasted, so roasted in small batches, not kind of commercial quantities, the kind of stuff that you'd get in a lot of good cafes in Melbourne.
And straight opposite, well, not quite straight opposite, very close to Chica's is that coffee shop with the beans. I don't know if you're very familiar with Carlisle Street and Balaclava. There's a specialty coffee shop, which he would have gotten a lot of that ideas from, where they do micro-roast and they have special lots. So that sounds very much like that place across the road from Las Chicas.
Yeah. So it probably is.
So maybe we can give something back to Italy, who has gifted us so generously so long.
It has. And I think that's...
Is it popular?
It's becoming more popular. It's funny when people go into that, because sometimes I'd go and I'd sit there and I'd with my laptop, again, because it's got that Aussie culture thing. So they've got the Wi-Fi and they're okay with people going in there with a laptop and working for hours, as a lot of places in Italy where you just go into the bar and you have your stand-up espresso and then you go. You don't hang around and they look at you strangely. So a lot of young people are more open to it, and he's very gracious, because a lot of people come in and they immediately go, why is it much more expensive than a 90 euro cent espresso, because it might be 2 euro, whatever it is. And he explains to them, and you know, some people are more open than others, and some are hesitant or suspicious at first, because the Italians can be quite traditional in the way they do things.
It's not how Nonna does it. So
yeah, it's always been done this way, therefore we will continue doing that. But then, you know, there are people who are kind of open to it, and people travel and, you know, kind of go, oh, yeah, I saw that in, I don't know, Melbourne or LA or somewhere, and then they kind of go, oh, let's try it here.
Have you found the same evolution in cooking as well, or is it still pretty much traditional?
A lot of it is, and there's very distinct regional cuisines. You know, people, like in Australia, a lot of people think of Italian food as one generic or unified thing. It's not. It's a collection of different, very distinctly regional cuisines that together make up this generic term called Italian cuisine. And so that's very still very strong, and I'm glad it is, and I think it will always be very strong. But there is a new wave of innovative young chefs who are doing great stuff. And again, in the book, like, I've showcased quite a few of those restaurants that are doing really interesting stuff and using, like here, small producers, local producers. Yep. using tradition as a starting point and then going, okay, let's subvert this or subvert that. And also, Italy has become an increasingly multicultural country. So you're starting to see influences from minorities in Italy coming into the food as well. And that's quite interesting.
So I guess this is Middle Eastern and North African influences?
The Chinese as well.
Chinese?
Oh, big Chinese community in Rome.
Is there?
Yep. There's a Chinatown.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. And what's really strange is I remember about 20 years ago when I first went
noodles
there.
Noodles are Chinese, aren't they?
Yeah.
That Marco Polo.
Well, exactly.
Back,
which is exactly. Busted. There you go. They've got, you've just
full
busted
circle.
Them.
Road, yeah.
You've busted
full
them.
Circle.
There's a lot of. There's more and more kind of cross pollination of ideas and stuff. And then again, there's another place. There's a ramen place that's in the book. And it's in the middle of nowhere, and this guy, this young Italian guy, is obsessed with ramen, and he did his thesis in Japanese, and then by chance he met his now wife, who's Japanese, in Rome. She was lost. It was just like the typical movie.
Yeah,
she was lost,
exactly.
And they fell in love. And then he's been going back to Japan and learning the art of ramen from her uncle, who has a ramen restaurant.
Oh, wow.
So he opened his own, and it was a pop-up at the back of a gym, and then he used to do, I think, karate, and then it became so popular, and everyone was going to the back of the gym after his training session to get this ramen, and he opened his own restaurant.
Well, that's a really good story. That's just, and so has he got Italian influences? Or
there's a few influences in there, but it's actually very authentic ramen.
Yeah.
So it's not this kind of fusion mess. It's actually quite authentic. But there's just a few subtle things here and there.
So what's traditional for the Rome region in terms of cooking that you wouldn't find anywhere else in Italy?
Cacio pepe, for example, the pasta with the...
Oh, yes, I think...
Yeah, cacio pepe, matriciana.
Pasta with... cheese and
cacio e pecorino and pepper.
And pepper,
And then there's the amatriciana, which is the guanciale, with the pork gel, and the martozzi as well, I think are quite a Roman thing. And there's many... Oh, that's right. And then there's a part of Rome called Testaccio, which is where the old abattoirs, the slaughterhouses used to be. And that is famous for basically for offal and innards and all the yucky stuff that most people, you know, feel ill thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
So they do a lot of that, like oxtail, and that's a kind of quite a robust. I mean, Roman cooking is quite robust and quite rustic, really. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fascinating. We've got a lot more to talk about in Rome Precincts, which is your book. I'd take my hat off to anybody who can write a book. It's a huge endeavour. And this is a beautiful book. It's beautifully produced. And we'll talk about some of the Roman Precincts afterwards and what surprised and delighted you.
Joy 94.9 is on air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But sometimes you can't always be with us when you want to. Here's the solution. Here's the solution. Listen to your favourite Joy 94.9 show anytime with our Joy podcast service. Our team of over 30 volunteers pick out the best bits from around 60 programs that Joy airs each week, made available to you for free download. To find a podcast of your favourite Joy show, search for us in the featured providers section within the iTunes store, or find them on the Joy website, joy.org.au. Joy Podcasts. Any show, any show, anytime, joy.org.au.
You're on the Escape Hour with Mark and Stefan, and our guest today is Melbourne-based globetrotting travel writer Christian Bonetto, and we're talking all about Rome.
Is that a message?
We do have a couple of messages.
Well, it's the same person.
Oh, I was really
two
excited.
Messages the yes, there's a bit of cross-border controversy from Austria here. We have a message from Anita Zaz, who I'm assuming may have Austro-Hungarian roots.
Oh.
Talking about coffee culture and not at least mentioning Vienna.
In my defense, I don't.
Oh, no, there's more.
I haven't been to Vienna.
You're going to have to defend yourself against more.
Oh, God, here we go.
Especially with Europride coming up there this June. Good point. You can sit for hours in a Kaufhaus in Vienna reading the papers provided there. es ist ganz gemütlich, eine Zeitung zu lesen. When you go into a place like a coffee shop, you can sit for hours and they bring the newspapers on these long sticks.
Yes, they do that in France as well.
Oh, they do it in France as well. Yeah, they do it in Austria and Germany. And it's encouraged to spend a lot of time in a Kaffeeklatschen, to sit around talking over coffee and cake. And Vienna is a very good opportunity to do that. So, Anita, bedanke mich ganz herzlich. That's a very lovely thing to remind us about. And Euro Pride coming up, Vienna, this year.
So they didn't get annoyed that you're there for hours? Because I know that in France they were starting to get really
It's really hard to tell whether an Austrian or German is annoyed, because that's basically how they wake up.
Well, I'm not going to
no
make
comment.
Any comment on this.
So to see someone who looks annoyed is pretty much the default position. So
you'll know in France, because people will be slamming things around you and for you to
carrying
order
on like
more.
A pork chop putting their cigarette out in your coffee.
Well, probably not anymore. They might have done that
maybe
20 years ago. Or on you.
Thank you very much, Anita, for your message. That's fantastic. So coffee culture in Rome is kind of where we left off. But as you were talking about Italy being such a diverse patchwork of former principalities, very different cultures, very different dialects and ways of doing things.
Different
and
history,
different-looking
people.
Different-looking people. The North, the Milanese people basically look like Germans, just well-dressed.
Well, a lot of my cousins, my Northern Italian cousins, a lot of them you would think were English or German.
Yeah. Well, there's also Südtirol, which is maybe Anita, if she's Austrian, can speak more to it, which is the German-speaking part of Italy, which most people forget about. There is a very large part of Italy on the Bolzano around that area, which is still German-speaking.
Yeah.
On
the Alto Adige. Yeah, the Südtirol.
So Rome in your book points to the patchwork of neighbourhoods and districts and precincts in Rome particularly, and that's what we really want to drill down on now for the rest of the show, is how diverse Rome is. Now, you were talking off air that what most people experience is just a snapshot of Roman history. So talk to us about that and what these precincts mean to you.
Sure.
Well, and what they should mean to other people.
Of course. Well, most people go to Rome and are there for a limited amount of time, and there's, quite rightly, very famous museums and churches they want to look at. And most of those are in a specific number of precincts or areas of the Centro Storico, the historic centre. And, you could go there and leave very happy, because it is so culturally rich, architecturally beautiful, and that in itself is enough. However, the book likes to also look at neighbourhoods that are a little bit further out that most visitors would never go to, but it's where the people of Rome, where the Romani hang out, and that's the whole point of the book. So it's not like a typical travel guide that's about, oh, well, you're a tourist and this is what you need to see and this is what you need to do. It's more like it's a curated guide to very special places to eat, drink, shop, and to just stroll, to be a flaneur in the city.
Ah.
And that includes neighbourhoods that aren't usually on the tourist itinerary.
Would you say that a typical sort of young, funky Romani is going to, is that the right word, Romani?
Yeah.
Is going to eschew being in those tourist areas and really gravitate more to a place where they're comfortable?
Well, I suppose it depends. It's like here. I mean, there's north side, south side, and there's, in Rome you have the northern Romans and the southern Romans and all the different urban tribes, the Indie and the more bourgeois people. So you do get people, who are Roman who go into the centre of Rome and to be seen and to see. But then there's, for example, a neighbourhood that that I look at in the book called Pigneto, and that is east of the city centre. And again, the European cities are pretty compact, so it's not like you have to travel 25, 30 k's out to go somewhere completely different. You're just going maybe 5 k's out. And
so it's walkable if you're really going to be a flaneur, if you're going to take the whole day to just sort of mince around.
You could, although there's a tram that goes from the Termini, from that area, which is the main train station, into Pigneto. And Pigneto is a really interesting area because, unlike the rest of Rome, which has kind of higher floored buildings, like the average floor height is about 6 floors in central Rome, this part, it reminds me more of like if you're in North, like Fitzroy or somewhere, it's all kind of more...
Two and three,
even one story.
Oh, okay.
Old workers' cottages. Really, really interesting. And Pasolini, the famous Italian film director, he filmed a Catone and a few other films, I think, in that particular area. And he lived then. There's a particular bar called Nerci, which he used to hang out in. And so a lot of, even to this day, a lot of young people who go there, they're kind of more indie, arty filmmakers, you know, songwriters, musicians, all hanging out there. And there's just all this amazing street art as well. And even the neighbourhood just outside of Pigneto, going one further out, there's these, you know, like we were talking about the post-war apartment buildings, these 12-storey monstrosities. Mm. But then on the actual sides of them, some famous street artists have painted these incredible murals. So you can just go and, without stepping into a museum queue, you can go and enjoy some lovely contemporary art.
Fantastic.
Al fresco.
So this is kind of like a Pran kind of experience, would you say?
It's
5Ks out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not that far. Yeah. About pretty much the same amount of time. I mean, on the tram from the station, it's probably not even 15 minutes, 10 minutes, something.
Easy.
Yeah, it's super easy, super easy. And then, like, you go, it's not like there's this one pedestrianised strip, but then if you go off that pedestrianised strip into the side streets, it's where you'll find some really, really interesting stuff. For example, there, and this is another place that's featured in the book, it's a bookshop that is completely dedicated to art inspired by tattoos. But it's not like but it's not just that you go in and there's books of like people's skin, you know. Like you might find a book on Caravaggio, you know.
Oh, right.
But
so
it's
cut
all
off heads everywhere.
So yeah, it'll all be linked in one way or another, but quite, you know, quite openly, or it's quite free form in how they've interpreted the link. But it's all about different things in different, I don't know, different focuses or different aspects of art and art history that have influenced tattoo art.
So outside of Sailor Jerry, we're talking about other genres of art that have given rise, there'd be a lot of religious art, like Caravaggio.
Yeah. And Japanese, and even stuff
Russian
like
tattoo,
subway art, just strange stuff. Like there was a book I remember on American street art, so it's quite cool. And then like one of the guy who owns the shop is actually in the shop, and that's the lovely thing about these places is that they're so intimate. They kind of immediately like. They're like portholes into the city because there's no middleman or middlewoman. You just go in there and you immediately talking to the person whose idea it was to open that place, and then they'll tell you, like, the guy who makes the T-shirts is his mate who is an artist who lives around the corner, and he's maybe got a studio and you should check it out. And you just end up having these great conversations. And
is English widely spoken in these communities?
Amongst young people, it is.
Because you do it all in Italian.
I do. Most young people speak speak English, and I think a lot of Italians are quite shy, so they just freak out and they'll say non parlo inglese, but when push comes to shove, they do. They're just embarrassed of making mistakes and stuff like that.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but no, I think even if you don't speak Italian, you can go to these places and you'll find people who do, and you'll just end up having a great time. And, you know, and sometimes it's fun. Like, you know, where it might lead you, a game of charades.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLD, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Our special guest today is a travel writer, author who's just finished a book called Rome Precincts, Christian Bonetto. Just before we went to that fun break, we were talking about the different precincts in Rome, and you were talking about one in particular, Pigneto.
Yeah.
So what are the other precincts that really spark joy in this Marie Kondo age?
Oh, my goodness. There's another place which is actually, it's much closer to the centre. You could argue that it is the centre, called Monti, and it's behind the Colosseum.
Where the pythons come from.
Well, it used to be called Suburra. It used to be called Suburra, and it was where Julius Caesar grew up.
Yeah.
And the word suburban comes from Suburra.
Ah. Is that real? Oh, okay, yeah, fun. Yep.
Suburra, because it was considered a suburb of the capital, and now it's basically central Rome. But it's kind of hidden away because it's surrounded by hills, so it's kind of in this little valley, and it feels really intimate. And they have this amazing market on weekends, Mercato Urbano di Monti, and it's all just local designers.
That's where the mercantile comes from, isn't it?
Yeah. So it does. All just really interesting local designers selling everything from really contemporary jewellery to hats to coats, and there's vintage as well, but very high quality vintage. And then they always have DJs playing, and it is so super cool. It's so super cool. And again, you know, people think Rome, they think, oh, Rome, old city, you know, monuments and columns and marble statues. Yes, there's all that, but people forget it's also a living, thriving city of, you know, four million.
There's been young people in Rome for 5,000 years.
Exactly. But it's still a modern city, and there's some great modern architecture. There's the Maxi Museum, which is designed by Zaha Hadid, Zaha Hadid.
Lots of curves.
Yeah, it's amazing. It looks like something out of, I don't know, Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing, again, with the book, bringing it back to the book, is that it's an ode to both historical things and tradition, but also to the cutting edge and to the current Rome and the current zeitgeist and the interesting young Romans who are doing really, really cool things. And some of them are merging, again, their city's history with their own cutting edge creativity. Like, again, jewellery shops and fashion designers doing really, really cool stuff. So,
where is the best place to do a bit of LGBTI people watching?
LGBTI. I mean, LGBTI everywhere.
People watching, but specifically.
People for watching. LGBTI people, you know, it's, you know, we. Yeah.
Well, I mean, let's
where would I go?
Well, you could go anywhere because Italy. Everywhere and anywhere in Italy. They're quite an attractive group of people. But there is, right next to the Colosseum in San Giovanni, there's a little street, and it's considered the gay village of Rome. But it's very modest. Hmm. Like, there's about two or three bars. And again, it's really cool because They're gay bars, but they're open all day, and it's not just LGBT going. Like, you have, you know, mum and dad and kids going, and it's openly gay, but it's cool, and there's no problem. Like, it's everyone's welcome. But then at night time, I suppose it's probably a little bit more LGBT. Lots of people congregate there to drink before they go clubbing. They go there, and people club later there, so people don't usually go to clubs before 11 or midnight. So they go out drinking, and
what do they do here?
Well, I don't know. Can you tell that I haven't been out to a nightclub for a while? Well, I used to go out. No, because I used to go out to clubs earlier than that, but maybe it's just because I'm an old nonno. Down inside. I don't know.
Va
bene, nonno. Va bene. No, but they do go out late. Clubs don't even open before midnight. And so they go drinking there. And it's amazing because you're drinking on the street, and right literally at the end of the street is the Colosseum. And that's when you have those, you know, pinch me moments where you're on this street, there's no cars just driving through. It's everyone's just like out drinking, and they don't drink stupidly. Like they drink in moderation, and everyone's just there to have a fun and get tipsy, but not get stupid. And then right in front of you is the Colosseum. Pretty amazing. Mm. Yep.
That sounds fantastic.
San Giovanni, that area, right next to the Colosseum is the hub of it. But then it's like here, like anywhere that's kind of cool and trendy is always going to be, a presence. And the same is with Trastevere, across the river. A lot of bars in Trastevere. There's a few universities. There's like a campus of, I can't remember the name, of an American university there as well. Okay. So it's quite an international crowd.
Mm.
Yep.
Yeah, well, Rome has been such a huge tourist attraction for, hundreds of years.
Mm.
Mm.
Yeah.
So if you were to write an itinerary that's non, after people have done, you know, the trophy founder, the three coins, blah, 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 and sort of all the big things, what would your hit list be for the first 3 days?
Well, I suppose start off in the centre, and by that, not after you've seen all the big things like you're talking about, but like Monte is a great area to go to, especially on weekends when there is the market and there's lots of cafes to go and enjoy. There's a really cool cafe that's also a plant shop, which is in the book.
Oh, really?
So you can go there and you can buy plants or gardening utensils, and then...
I love that.
They have like a communal table at the back and a few smaller tables, and they serve organic food and lots of vegetarian and vegan food.
Mm-hmm. Pluck it off the wall.
Automaticus. Well, they pluck it off the wall because then they put it in the food. So that's a really special place. Pigneto, neighbourhood that I told you. And again, you could spend a good part of a day there just looking at street art and going to the shops, and I would go there maybe in the afternoon, so you can, after you've looked at the interesting shops and you've looked at the street art, the bars are opening up and you can have an aperitivo. Mm-hmm. The great thing about aperitivo in Italy is when you buy a drink, you always get nibbles for free.
Ah.
So the drinks cost less than here, and you actually get food as well.
So you're fed as well.
You get fed as well.
Yeah. So and what do they serve typically? Does it change all over Rome? I'm sure it does all over Italy, but...
It depends where you go. Some places it'll be something as simple as chips, like just potato crisps. But in Italy, the idea of drinking without there being food is quite uncivilized. Mm-hmm. So wherever there's, I don't know, it's probably in France, the idea of having a table where everyone's just sitting there with a bottle of wine just seems very sad and poor.
You'd get some olives or peanuts or
exactly. So it's olives or peanuts. But there are certain places you go to and you might pay a bit more, but they put on like a buffet. There's a place in Trastevere called Freni e Frizioni, and they basically, that's dinner. I can't remember how much you pay for the drink, but then you have this buffet and you can keep going back, and they've got couscous and pasta dishes and salads and maybe polpette, like meatballs, and it's dinner. And like by the time you've had that, you just go, that's it, like I'm done.
Crisis averted.
and money saved,
particularly when you're travelling and paying for that accommodation.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
We are with Christian Bonetto, who is talking about Rome and its precincts. And we had a really good discussion on where to go, which precinct to go. So if you had to choose one of this precinct...
To live in? Yeah.
Oh, my God. Maybe Nomentana, which is to the east.
So that's the one, the 5 kilometres.
No, that's Pigneto.
Oh,
this is another one.
I'm getting confused now.
This is another one.
The books too far.
I will.
It's one of many precincts in there. And I would live there because... It's a very comfortable place to live. There's some lovely places to eat and drink. Very few tourists go there, so you really feel like you're in
proper
Rome. Mm. But again, it's very close to the centre.
Okay,
and
it's fairly low rise.
This is quite the average six-story buildings. But there's a lot of green. It's next to two very big parks.
That sounds lovely.
It is absolutely beautiful.
So, in all these precincts you feature in, and the patchwork of precincts in your book, there's accommodation as well for people that want to.
Not all of them. But there's accommodation in the precincts.
Yes,
definitely
in the precincts.
In these actual quarters, but in the book I don't talk about like hotels and stuff. But no, there's definitely an Airbnb. Gosh, I'm sure you'll find lots of places
of options,
to sleep. Yeah,
options for
definitely.
People to stay and be really in the Roman living with the so out of the tourists
completely
beaten track. Yeah, that sounds like a really good way to do it. Really,
the listeners have to find their own accommodation, and once they've done that, then I can help them with the rest.
Thank you very much for joining us on the Escape Hour. It's been lovely to explore Roman precincts.
Grazie mille.
Prego mille. And we'll have to have you on again another time and can talk to us about things you're writing for The Lonely Planet, particularly New York to LA, which is our theme song.
Yes. I love we need to hear a little bit more about New York, LA.
Yeah, absolutely. We can never have enough. Actually, you should come back and talk to us about LA, because LA is resurging in popularity. It is becoming a very different city because no one can afford to live in San Francisco
anymore. I am obsessed with LA, and I think people don't understand Los Angeles, so I would be more than happy to come back
and
talk
to you. Let's do that. We're going to schedule a program on LA because it's becoming very, very hip and cool.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.